Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another extra episode of Bible Backdrop. I'm going to take a short aside from the history of Israel to talk about a different subject. With Easter coming up, I wanted to do an episode on the science and biology behind the crucifixion. This is always seen as a difficult subject, especially since widespread use of this barbaric practice died with the Roman Empire. The problem there is that people don't have a good understanding of what was involved in the actual act of crucifixion. We don't have a sense of how much suffering Jesus actually went through when he died. So I wanted to take an episode here and give you an idea of what happened. To start, crucifixion was started by the Persians around 479 BC, but it was perfected by the Romans. It was reserved for criminals who committed crimes such as murder or theft, highway robbers and such, but it was mostly used for those who committed treason against the state. With the taking of Jerusalem in 70 AD, many of the rebels who were caught were crucified. If a slave killed their master, all the slaves belonging to that master were crucified, even women and children. It was a punishment that carried weight and a message. See what happens to those who defy Rome and their rightful masters. Let's start the story with what happens in the Gospels. Jesus has his Last Supper with his disciples and then goes to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. There, under intense stress, knowing what's about to happen, he prays for the cup to pass from him, but then prays for the Father to do his will. After this, Judas shows up with the Roman cohort and kisses Jesus to show who they were to arrest. Since it was night, identification was required to arrest the right person. Jesus is arrested and brought into Jerusalem. There, he is mocked and beaten. Keep in mind that he has already been awake for almost 24 hours under a huge amount of stress. The beating wears down his strength even more and certainly starts bruising along with taking a psychological toll. After appearing before the Sanhedrin, he is then taken to Pilate. Pilate finds nothing that can be worthy of crucifixion, so he sends Jesus to Herod. Herod questions Jesus for some time, but Jesus makes no response, knowing Herod's desire for a sign or miracle, thinking it was a showman's trick. Herod then sends him back to Pilate, who questions him further. Again, finding nothing to warrant crucifixion, he offers to have him punished and released. However, the crowd outside, swollen from the number of people there for Passover and possibly bribed by the Sanhedrin, called for him to be crucified and to release Barabbas. Pilate literally washes his hands of the matter and gives him over to be crucified. Why Pilate decided to go ahead with the crucifixion of Jesus is a whole other episode that involves the politics of the time. The bottom line is, he was trying to keep the peace. Judea was a powder keg on the verge of rebellion, and if it happened under Pilate, he would be held responsible. After the decision was made, Jesus was handed over to the Roman soldiers. These men were professionals and knew how to brutally torture someone, both physically and psychologically. First, the Gospel of John says he was flogged. This one simple sentence is very impactful. Flogging was a punishment that often killed the offender. Called verberatio by the Romans, the whip used was called the flagellum and was made as an absolutely brutal instrument. The flagellum was similar to the cat of nine tails that you may have heard about in naval stories, but was much worse. The long strands of leather also had pieces of metal and bone woven into it, and the men who administered this punishment knew exactly how to use it. The whip would hit the skin and be dragged across the back, tearing it to ribbons. It was long enough that it may have hit the front of the body and then be dragged across the back. The result of all this is that Jesus' back muscles are exposed, and maybe even his veins and arteries. He has lost a huge amount of blood, which puts his body into shock and greatly increases his heart rate. Another factor in the blood loss is that he would now be extremely thirsty, as the body would want fluids to help increase the blood volume. After the flogging, the soldiers throw a purple robe and the crown of thorns on him while mocking him relentlessly. They then beat him around the face, causing the thorns to drive deeper into the skin and hitting the nerve to the face, causing intense pain down his face and neck. After this, Pilate tries again with the crowd. He may be hoping that the sight of a beaten and bloody Jesus would pacify the mob. If so, he hoped in vain. The crowd still demanded a crucifixion, and in order to avoid a revolt, Pilate complied. As a last act of humiliation, convicted criminals were forced to carry the crossbeam for their cross up to the place of execution. Jesus, exhausted, beaten, and in shock, is physically unable to do so, and Simon of Cyrene is pulled from the crowd to carry it for him. Once getting to Golgotha, now the real nightmare begins. Jesus is stripped naked, thrown to the ground, and is nailed to the crossbeam. The nails are 7 to 9 inches long and are driven through the wrist between the radius and the ulna. Many translations say that the nails were in his hands, but the Greek word for hand included the wrist area. If they had actually put them through his hands, the weight of his body would have ripped right through. Nails going through the wrist would also damage the nerve to the hand, causing intense pain up both of the arms. After being nailed to the crossbeam, it is then secured to the standing pole. When this happens, Jesus' full weight is borne upon his nailed wrists and his shoulders and elbows dislocate, causing his arms to be 6 to 9 inches longer than their original length. This fulfills Psalm 22:14, where it's written, quote, "And all my bones are out of joint," end quote. Now that Jesus is secured to the crossbeam and is on the standing pole, the soldiers nail Jesus' feet to the cross. Like the arm, there is a nerve in the foot that is struck by the nail again, causing pain in his feet and legs. His knees are flexed at almost 90 degrees, and all his body weight is pushed down on the nails and the ankles support the weight. In this position, breathing becomes more and more difficult and painful. With his weight on his feet, his lungs fill with air, but cannot be released. Jesus must push himself up on his nailed feet, which have been pierced through a nerve causing more pain, in order to exhale. But he can't stay in that position because he must then inhale. So he lowers his weight onto his feet again in order to inhale. Keep in mind that while he is doing this, his open wounds on his back are rubbing up against the cross. And I'm sure this wasn't polished wood. It was certainly very rough, and splinters would probably be digging into his skin all over his back. Unlike what we see in many movies, where Jesus or anyone else is crucified, people did not stay in one position. As it became harder and harder to exhale, and carbon dioxide builds up in Jesus' blood, he would probably start moving up and down the cross faster and more often. This, of course, put more stress on his wrists, elbows, and legs. It would also increase the pain in his back as the rough cross rubbed against the open wounds. Basically, crucifixion was a slow form of suffocation. With the increase in carbon dioxide and the decrease in oxygen, tissues and capillaries began leaking a watery fluid from the blood in the tissues. This leads to a buildup of fluid around the heart and lungs. The decrease in oxygen also damages the heart, leading to cardiac arrest. It is possible that Jesus died of a heart attack. To quicken death, the person being crucified could have their legs broken. This would prevent them from being able to breathe, and suffocation would take care of the rest. This is what happened to the two criminals next to Jesus. Being so close to the Sabbath, the religious leaders did not want the bodies hanging there as they were responsible for burial. When they came to Jesus and found him already dead, they did not break his legs, but pierced his side with a spear to make sure. The watery fluid that built up around the heart that John describes as blood and water then comes pouring out. After his death, Jesus is removed from the cross and Joseph of Arimathea claims his body and puts him in a new tomb. Why is this important? Since nobody had been in this tomb when he is resurrected, there can be no doubt that he is alive again, as there would be no bodies at all in the tomb that could be mistaken for his body. With no body at all, it was obvious that Jesus was no longer there. With the massive stone and a Roman guard, nobody could have stolen the body. Based on this information, there could be only one explanation. He is risen. Thank you again for listening to this extra episode of Bible Backdrop. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can email me at BibleBackdrop@gmail.com. Word of mouth is still the best way for news of the show to get around, so please tell a friend and have them subscribe. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful week.